The next matter, number 23-1125, United States versus Jose A. Vega Figueroa. At this time, would counsel for the appellant please introduce himself on the record to begin?
Good morning. For the record, court-appointed attorney Frank Concerning Milo. I respectfully request 2 minutes for rebuttal. Does the court grant that?
Yes.
Thank you. First of all, the court should know and realize that at page 23 of the government's brief, the government conceded that the district court erroneously treated Guideline 1B1.13 policy statement as mandatory in its findings. So right off the bat, you have an error with it right there that's been conceded by the government. Now, I'd like to point out that not only that, the court, district court, in its December 12, 2022 opinion and order, failed to consider 3553A factors that have been provided to the court ever since February 2021, when the original motion for reduction of sentence based on the First Step Act was filed. There were a myriad of
Counsel, are you suggesting that the district court has to go one by one and specifically make findings as usual?
Well, Your Honor, based on the holistic theory expanded in your case law, Lugada and the other case law involving the compassionate release, I understand, yes, the court had to follow a proper way of channeling that discretion. And that included the family issues. He has 6 children. The time in prison, he's been in prison for half of his life. He's been in prison for 27 years. Those 27 years make it a time served three. If he was sentenced to 360 days, he would be time served at 306, okay? He served 324 months as of April of this year. Now, the judge, the court also should have considered the health situation that involved a myriad of complications, not only his diabetes, hypothyroidism. I can give you, as a matter of fact, I filed a 27J letter recently, 3 days ago, because I found it to be my obligation to give the court the latest situation regarding his
Counsel,
knee, his left knee, which was infected when he was in COVID.
Just before you go, Judge Huff has a question.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
About that letter you just filed, shouldn't that be, from your point of view, it's newly discovered evidence, and there's Federal Rule of Procedure 33, isn't that the proper avenue for presenting that to the district court?
Your Honor, the district court knew of this. Let me make sure that you and the law clerks know this. This case, the district court received 36 supplemental motions filed regarding my client's health. In addition to the COVID issue, in addition to the infection, the vulnerability by the CDC, in addition to all those other things, the court has received that. Now, this is something you have to realize. The prosecution, the government, never reacted to any of those 36 supplemental motions. And the judge, the district judge, never ruled on any of them. He just went noted.
But 36 motions. Yes, but your appeal is from something the district court did rule on, correct?
Yes, denied.
And in that, that's what we were reviewing, not the other motions.
Right. Your Honor, you're reviewing an opinion and order issued in December of 2022 after the court received a myriad of 3553.
And so the question is, in the ruling that we're reviewing, that was from a First Step Act motion that it ruled on. And the question is, did it fail to consider something in that ruling?
Definitely.
Okay, and in that ruling, it refers to the health issues that were raised, and then says, on balance, given the 3553A factors, I'm determining in light of the dangerousness that I'm not going to grant the relief.
Your Honor, I'm sorry.
Is that wrong?
No, that's wrong.
Okay.
The district court only considered 2 things, security, safety to the community, and his diabetes, period. That's the only 2 things that he considered. He didn't consider The trial test is not a duty, if I may finish my
question. No, you may not. Judge Helpe has a question for you.
Go ahead, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm looking at the opinion, page 7, and the judge says they have to submit extensive medical information for the request for compassionate release. Suffers from type 2 diabetes, hypertension, hypothyroidism, back pain, left knee arthritis, frequent headaches, aches, and occasional electric-like muscle reactions. The judge is aware of everything. He's considering everything.
Well, the thrust of the court's order is based on diabetes and on the issue of security. Now, my point is that in December, 11 days before the opinion and order, I filed a motion with three very important subjects. Trial testimony that showed that the snitch, the government's witness, Robert, lied. Number two, it showed that the sentencing judge made no reference to the elements of the crime of murder, okay? And for which he made a cross-reference of murder, okay? My main point is that my client suffered double jeopardy. It was raised before the district court during trial, and it was raised, and I raised it to
And the district court responded in the order by saying that given the standard of review is different on sentencing, and it's appropriate if there's a preponderance to support it. So the argument that there was acquitted conduct isn't determinative of anything.
Your Honor, with all due respect, I understand that the abuse of acquitted conduct was erroneous, and it is erroneous right now. And there is, on November 1st, as Your Honors know, there's an amendment that's going to go into effect. Now, I believe, go ahead.
We have to go by the arguments you made in your file. Okay. In your brief, its headline didn't take account of the fact that there was an acquittal.
That's correct. Of the same crime, the murder.
In the opinion, the district court directly responds to the point that there was acquitted conduct and says that's not dispositive because under the preponderance standard for sentencing, the conduct could still be relevant. So why isn't that? Just show the particular argument you make in your brief.
Your Honor,
just isn't true in light of what the district court did.
My point is that for the court to make a murder cross-reference, there has to be in the record elements of that crime. It's not just preponderance, Your Honor. This is double jeopardy is the crime. The crime of murder requires thought. You have to. The sentencing judge, Your Honor, never mentioned the elements of murder during the sentencing colloquy. They were not included in the jury instructions, and they were not included in the indictment, Your Honor. The crime of murder is not included in the indictment. Now, how can you penalize somebody? Go hit two life sentences for a crime that my
may client, I ask a question?
Go ahead, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Okay. Here's the heading in your brief of this issue. Did the district court err in failing to take judicial notice of the defendant appellant's acquittal in state court?
I asked the district judge a myriad of times to give us a hearing. I asked him a myriad of times to take judicial notice of that acquittal in state court of the same murder, of the same two murders.
In the district court's opinion, it acknowledges the acquittal and says, nonetheless, relevant conduct can be considered under the question. Did you make an argument to us that there was no basis for finding by a preponderance?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where do you make that in your brief?
Well, I sent Your Honor 4 days ago.
Yeah, but that's not the brief.
It's not in the brief, but it's a truth, Your Honor. My obligation as counsel is to bring to the court the truth. And that's what I'm looking for, the truth.
Okay, thank you.
My time is up.
Thank you, counsel. Next, would counsel for the United States please introduce herself on the record to begin.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Jennifer Velez-Perez for the United States. This case is an appeal of a denial of a motion for the district court's denial of Mr. Vega's motion based on its determination that the 3553 factors counseled against release. The district court did not abuse its discretion in making this determination because the district court considered the majority of the 3553 factors. It first considered the nature and circumstances of the offense and Vega's history and characteristics. It bounds and recognizes efforts to rehabilitation against his role as a leader in a drug trafficking operation that was severe. As this court's opinion in Vega's direct appeal stated, the drug trafficking organization was extensive and had impeccable organization. Everything from the color of the packaging used for the drugs to the preferred car models used in drive-by shootings to the particular kinds of firearms permitted to carry in various situations were under Mr. Vega's control. The district court then considered that the organization engaged in violent crimes under Mr. Vega's direction. The enterprise routinely carjacked vehicles and used them for drive-by shootings targeted against rival drug dealers. And the district court also relied on the fact that there was evidence of the murder of rivals, including two murders at Hogar Crea, a nonprofit rehab facility. The district court then goes on to look at the need for the sentence imposed and particularly focused on the need to protect the public, finding that on balance, Vega was still a dangerous looking community.
Is that dangerousness to the community an appropriate factor under 3553A, or is it better couched under relief under 3582?
Well, Your Honor, in this court's recent opinion in D'Angelo, the court looked at that same question and decided that yes, the district court can look at whether or not the defendant is still a danger to the community under the 3553 analysis. And so we find, we're asking the court specifically in light of these recent rulings in D'Angelo and Ayala Vasquez, where the district court's primary factor behind the determination is a finding of dangerousness, we're asking this court to affirm. And
let me ask you, counsel, the district court, we'll understand, or 3553A or the First Act, when you consider dangerousness, the court has discretion to give it more weight than other rehabilitative or other conditions, am I correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And in this particular case, you were just reciting why the court gave more weight to that.
Yes, exactly. And this court has found no error in cases where the district court has done just that, as I just cited those two recent opinions in D'Angelo and Ayala's case.
Given that you agree the district court erred in terms of treating 1B1.13 as binding, why shouldn't we remand this down for the court to redo its analysis?
Well, this court has said that the both prongs is a disjunctive test, so it can affirm or deny on either prong. And even though we're conceding error on the first part, the extraordinary compelling part of the analysis, we do not concede error on the 3553 factors, and this court can and has affirmed on that basis multiple times. Even where the government has conceded error, or where the court has found a rule of error on the first part of the analysis.
As I read the district court's opinion, there's no separate analysis of whether there's a, by preponderance of the evidence, a basis for applying the murder cross-reference. As I read it, it just rejects the argument that because of the acquitted conduct, you can't consider. Is that how you understand that?
The district court did reject it, and also did reject it on the fact that, yes, acquitted conduct can be relied upon for purposes of sentencing, and it discusses multiple other instances where this argument has been raised and rejected.
Did the defendant below to the district court argue that even if the acquitted conduct could be considered for sentencing, there was not sufficient basis for showing by a preponderance that the murder cross-reference applied?
I don't believe he did in his first motion. In at various points in his supplemental motions, he adds additional information, but I don't think he makes that specific argument.
No, he represents he's made it recently in a 28J letter to us, and what's the government's response to that?
His argument all along has been that it wasn't charged and it wasn't in the jury instructions, and the jury didn't find beyond a reasonable doubt that he had committed murder. So he cites the wrong standard all along the litigation, because for the sentencing court, all they needed to do was find by preponderance of the evidence that the defendant had engaged in conduct that had resulted in the murder of a victim in the territorial.
And your contention is he never challenged the basis for being able to find that under that standard.
He never challenged it under that standard. And it, yeah, throughout the history of this case, the trial of this case, which has been long, in the direct appeal, this court found that he had ordered and been responsible for at least two murders. Even though he had been acquitted, the witnesses that Mr. Vega talks about or refers to now had been extensively cross-examined during the jury trial. And so the district court could make the determination by the preponderance of the evidence. It was also in the unobjected PSR had the facts of the murders.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. At this time, counsel for the appellant, please reintroduce yourself back on the record. You have a 2-minute rebuttal.
Court appointed attorney Frank Inserni for the defendant. Your honors, I call your attention to the Quiroz Morales opinion, 83, Fed 4, page 87. It states the district court never undertook an evaluation of the 18 U.S. Code 3553 factors. Remand life sentence of 360 months. I call the court's attention to the district court's opinion and order granting the release of Mr. Quiroz Morales, and I bring to your attention that I filed a motion requesting the court to take judicial notice of excerpts of that opinion and order by Judge Camille Benet, where she questions the government's a testimony of their witness that was not truthful, which is entirely applicable, in my opinion, to this case also, because it's the same witness, and I brought to the court's attention that Judge Casellas never made reference to the crime of murder. He only said, deaths took place, murders took place, but there's no specific reference to my client. And the issue is, you have a double jeopardy issue here, which I believe your honors can take control of and determine that the acquitted conduct is a violation to the Fifth Amendment's right to a jury trial. I think that's the core of this issue. And the finally, my client, your honor, he's got 6 children, his 70-year-old mother who's in court, he's got a son who will give him house, work, transportation. He cannot walk, he hasn't been able to walk, he's walked with crutches since April 2008. All these things the court had before it, and it did not refer to any of them, okay? And I trust that the holistic view mentioned by Judge Celia in his opinions was never taken into consideration by the district court. And I think your honors can take into consideration all of these. I could give you citations of the appendix, but my time's up. Thank you. Permission to withdraw. Permission to leave.
Yes.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes argument in this case.